Before we get into today's show, I have an urgent update to share with you. As you probably know, this podcast is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. And with our financial year ending on June 30th, we're facing a $52,000 gap in funding that must be closed by this date. With just days to go, generous friends of the ministry have now offered to match every dollar given towards this goal up to $10,000. So please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Professor Lewis?
Yes?
Anna Freud.
Ah.
Nice to meet you.
And you.
Good luck.
Dr. Freud.
Sit, please. Not there. That's the transformation couch. You be careful. Why would you come here to see me if you disagree so passionately with my views?
You've insisted all your life that the very concept of God is ludicrous.
Yes.
Clash between God and Satan.
Ah, but I did not say whose side I was on. I consider what people tell me far less interesting than what they choose not to tell me.
Have you frightened off your professor yet?
Not yet. Soon, perhaps. You challenge my disbelief, is that correct?
I do.
Well done. Good. Too late to turn back now. It seems to me, Professor, you've never matured enough to face the terror of being alone in the dark.
What is it you think I'm so afraid of?
Yeah, we're all terrified. Do you bury your doubts? You bury your memories of the war? But at the core of your being, we're all cowards before death.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com. where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
The film Freud's Last Session recently hit UK cinemas, based on a play which was inspired by a book. The premise of the film is an imagined conversation between Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis on the eve of World War II. And joining me to discuss this brilliant film is the film's director and co-writer, Matthew Brown. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. I guess the obvious question to start with is, why did you want to tell this story?
Good question. it touched on themes that I've just always been intrigued by, mortality. You know, I had a lot of friends who passed away, unfortunately, in my life. Like, it was just a bad string of horrible luck, from plane crashes to disease to everything. So I've always been questioning this stuff myself, and thinking about it a lot, and life and death, and trying to make sense of things. And I suppose that is sort of like something that draws me in when I look at projects, and if it's touching on bigger themes that I want to explore personally. So this was one that came to me right after I did another film, sort of similar territory, The Man Who Knew Infinity. And I wasn't in a big rush to go back into the same well, but I also couldn't say no to it at the same time. And then it had these really intriguing characters, and C.S. Lewis was always interested in, as well as Freud. And my father, full disclosure, he's a psychiatrist. So I grew up with Freud in the house, in a sense. And I didn't really ever sort of pull the book off the shelf and look at it. It just was, my dad was a psychiatrist, and I suppose this was an opportunity to sort of slow down and learn more about who Freud was, and C.S. Lewis as well. So that was also really just interesting to me. So I get drawn to films by they're so hard to make, you know, and so hard to get done. And it's, if you're going to do it, you have to really care a lot. And so it helps when you're just really personally interested in it in a big way.
Well, and as I said at the beginning, the conceit is obviously this imagined conversation between these two incredible minds. Do we actually know whether Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis ever met? Or at the very least, would they have been aware of each other's works, do you think?
No, they definitely would have been aware of each other. The question as to whether or not they actually met, we don't know. I know that Nikolai, who was the author of the original book, he insinuated that there was a possibility of it happening. It's a weird coincidence. I learned right after the film that Lady Jill Freud actually lived in the house of Lewis.
In the kilns.
In the kilns, actually. Wow. during the war, and became the inspiration for Lucy. So wow. That was a very strange coincidental thing. And I think there were a few connections, so it was within scope of belief.
Yeah, there's mention, isn't there, in Freud's diary that he met with an Oxford Don, or no, in the visitor book or something, that he met with an Oxford Don. So the sort of speculation.
Yeah, I mean, it all came about because when Nikolai was doing the class up at Harvard, the seminar, he was doing one on Freud for years. It had a lot of good attendance and people were really enjoying it, but he always felt like he needed a counterpoint, and a counterpoint to Freud, in his mind, the perfect one was Lewis. So he brought him in, and I think he started to sort of see some connections as well. It was a reasonability that could have happened.
Yeah. So as you say, Nikolai, who wrote the book, that was based on a series of lectures that he did over like 20 years or something, wasn't it?
Hugely successful. Yeah. It really, once he got Lewis involved, it really took off. I think people really thought this is.
And he seems to imply that actually Lewis used Freud's reasoning to defend his atheism before he became a Christian. So clearly, even if Freud wasn't aware of Lewis, Lewis was evidently aware and significantly influenced by Freud, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, you mentioned that your father was a psychiatrist and you were obviously presumably more well-versed in Freud than Lewis. But how did you first come across C.S. Lewis?
I grew up with the Narnia books. I mean, I had them on the bookshelf and I read them time and again. I just kept, you know, I loved them as a young boy. I didn't make the connection to Christianity. I mean, I suppose I might have sort of intuited it on some level, but I didn't really know much about that until this project came along. And I'd been pretty well aware of the Inklings, you know, but I didn't know about this whole conversion to Christianity. And I didn't know that he was an atheist at one point. I just thought that was really, really interesting. The other thing that drew me to this was this idea of intellectual curiosity that both of these people, I think, truly did have a true sense of wanting to investigate and be proven wrong and then keep on investigating. And I just feel like that's a little bit missing in the world at the moment. So it drew me in. I just thought how wonderful that these two, even if it was fictional, opposing ideologically speaking people could want to actually come together and hear what the other person had to say.
You know, and presumably you read at least a smattering of Lewis's works in the preparation for this film. Were there any works that particularly resonated with you or challenged you or sort of raised questions for you?
Mere Christianity was the one that I really focused on. Because, I mean, I picked back up the Narnia books, but I mean, that's just more for fun for me in a sense. Mere Christianity, I read that again twice because it's a lot for my little brain to figure out.
I once tried to read it on a beach. Never again. I needed a pen and paper.
But I got a sense of it. You know, I don't try to pretend that I'm an expert on either of these amazingly intelligent people, but I did get a sense of it and I appreciated it. So that was it. And then, you know, just a lot of Google searches and thinking about it and talking about it with the actors who, you know, the nice thing with when you have wonderful actors like we have, they do deep dives on their own as well. And they kind of become experts on their own. So it's fun to talk to them about their interpretations of it. Mm. I mean, as a film director, I was really thinking about it more just as human beings. I mean, I wanted us to sort of forget for a minute that it is C.S. Lewis and forget that it is Freud and just think about them as humans who are struggling just as we all do because they were too. I mean, really, you couldn't dream up two more sort of, I don't want to say flawed, but flawed individuals. I mean, you know, they had foibles and struggles and like all the rest of us. So we put them on these big pedestals, but we're all in the same boat.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned great actors there. Freud's Last Session has got an incredibly stellar cast. Why do you think Sir Anthony Hopkins and Matthew Goode and some of the other brilliant actors decided to come on board, given that it is fairly niche? And as you say, it's discussing these sort of academic issues. It's probably not one for everyone, is it? But how did you draw in these incredible actors?
Well, at first I would have said it's because of these great men, but I don't think that really was it. I think that they, for each of them, I would say, with Hopkins, it was a chance to really look back at his whole life. I mean, he was alive during World War II, and he's considering his mortality at his age right now, very much so. And I think for him, it was a unique opportunity to kind of bring this whole lifetime to bear on this question that he's dancing around, and then to kind of get a few things off his chest that I think he might have felt similarly about or struggles with. And so I think that was the appeal for him. And it was really interesting, actually, because we shot in Ireland, I think you might know, at Ardmore Stages, and he was there 50 years earlier shooting A Lion in Winter as his first film. So for him to come back 50 years later onto the same stage, you could see it on that first day he came in. It was just like, wow, my whole life is hitting me in the face. And I think he really liked that chance to kind of look back on things. And he has a wonderful process that he sort of opened up with me during this. And he brings so much to each moment of scenes, and he's drawing on different experiences in his life for them. And it's pretty wonderful. So, and then for Matthew, I think he was very, very intrigued by C.S. Lewis, but I think he was also very intrigued by this whole conversation and also the opportunity to work opposite Hopkins, I'm sure.
Yeah. So. And obviously Anthony Hopkins played C.S. Lewis in Shadowlands years and years before. So just a really interesting parallelism there. And I'm sure Matthew Goode probably felt the pressure of the elephant in the room.
He definitely did. And Hopkins was wonderful about it. And they talked about it. And I think he just said, you find your own version of this and don't be afraid to. So he really encouraged him. And then Matthew played a little bit of an homage wearing the sweater that Hopkins, I guess, had worn in Shadowlands. So it was really sweet. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, there must have been so many things as you were reading and researching and writing, rewriting, directing. What were some of the things that really interested you or surprised you about Freud or Lewis throughout the process of making this film?
I was pretty surprised by the relationships with the women. And I thought that they were really important to telling the story. I mean, you say it is niche, and it is niche, and it is sort of it's
kind of niche. Don't get me wrong.
No, I appreciate it. But it is. It's kind of its own thing. It's sort of there's not a lot of films being made like this today. Everything is sort of TikTok fast genre. So this is more of a slow burn in a sense, but it gives you an opportunity to really get in and understand the motivations of these men and where they're coming from. And you can't do that without really understanding the people in their lives. So what I was particularly interested in was both of their significant others, in a sense, not significant, I guess I should say the women in their lives. So Anna Freud, the fact that he had Anna Freud, his daughter, in therapy with him at the same time or near the same time that he had Dorothy in therapy with him, and they are lovers that he's not approving of, is I just thought that you can't make that up. That's really interesting. And then with Janie Moore, that relationship really intrigued me, because I do feel like we have a way of sort of whitewashing history at times, or not wanting to look under the surface. And for years, I think it was always, Anna and Janie Moore, both people that I think the protectors of C.S. Lewis and the protectors of Freud don't want really discussed. And I think times have changed so much over the last, especially the last decade. And I think that it's really important and really interesting to kind of understand those relationships, because it sheds whole new lights on the men. So Janie Moore and that relationship, I had no idea about. I only knew about Joy. Still have a hard time wrapping my head around how her name was Joy. And he discovered Joy, but, that's manifesting. But the relationship with Janie Moore is really interesting. And I think that the more I delved into it, the more I felt like that really was a romantic relationship that really did take a turn at a certain point. I think it's kind of hard to argue with that. But what I found particularly interesting about it was that when she got dementia, all those years later that she was in a home, he would visit her every single day until her death. And I just thought, what an act of kindness, and what a kind man to do that. Just incredible. Yeah.
And that kindness, I think Matthew Goode does a really good depiction of Lewis's kindness. I mean, they definitely talk about it in the film, the relationship, or at least they hint at it when they're discussing about Janie. How do you think Lewis would have perceived that relationship? Because as you say, it has largely been brushed under the carpet by a lot of Lewis scholars, hasn't it?
Well, I think it was interesting. I one of my regrets about the film is that sometimes when you make a movie, you can't keep everything in the film. Yeah. And with this one, it was enough to hint at the relationship, I think, and it still would work, but it started to become too much to put too much of that relationship into the film. But we did have a couple of other scenes with Janie Moore that I suppose will be on the DVD, but they were interesting, and it looks at the deterioration of that relationship and how God really became between them, in a sense that when he became a Christian, he basically pushed back on that relationship. And, you know, I think the cynical question, or maybe realistic, I don't know, would be, did he push back on it because she was older and he was not as romantically interested in her? And is he using Christianity as a excuse to get out of the romantic side of that relationship, or not? And we looked at that a little bit, and I don't think that that is the case, personally, but he did it, that the timing of that was such that she was very much against his embracing Christianity. And I think she resented the Tolkiens and their influence on him, because it was putting a big problem in their relationship.
Matt, do you think the big questions that Freud and Lewis discuss around many topics, including the existence of God, the prevalence of human suffering, the perceived conflict between religion and science, are they still relevant now, these questions? Or was that of the particular time when they were discussing these things?
No, I think I think the question of our time right now is science and God. I mean, that to me is. So I think it's incredibly relevant. I think the film is surprisingly relevant, really, when you think about all the parallels between what was going on at that time and what's going on now, whether it's the questions of dictatorships coming up, you know, the right wing, the left wing, the extremes, the extremes really coming to power. And we have two wars going on simultaneously right now. This was in the beginning of war as well. So there's a lot of parallels. I think it's an incredibly timely film and question about science and God. There's a quote I've used a bunch in the press, and it's been a while, so I can't really remember it properly, but it was an Einstein quote about basically, you know, a religion without science is blind and science without religion is lame, something to that effect, if that's correct. And I think there's some real truth to that. I think that the two need each other in a sense and have to be able to look at the strengths of one another for us as people to grow.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that this podcast is made possible by the generosity of friends like you. And right now, we're facing a $52,000 funding gap that must be closed before the end of our financial year on June 30th. Generous friends of this ministry have offered to match every dollar given up to $10,000, so I'm asking you to give your very best gift right now. Your gift will help keep important conversations like this one coming to listeners like you. Closing this gap in full by June 30th is vital. So please give your best gift today, knowing your gift will be doubled. You can give now at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. As a director, you presumably didn't want to bring any of your personal biases into the film. So how did you ensure balance when Freud and Lewis are discussing these hot topics? Because presumably there'll be lots of people watching that will have opinions either way and will see themselves siding more with Freud or siding more with Lewis. How did you ensure that it was a balanced conversation? Because to me, it does come across pretty balanced.
I hope so. I mean, that was my intention. I mean, it's tough when you have to cut a couple scenes and then you feel like, did you throw them out this way or this way? I mean, I feel like today everybody's got such an agenda, politically speaking. And, it, you know, I mean, art is a place where we're supposed to express ourselves and we have this incredible freedom to do that. I've always sort of embraced that aspect of things. But with this particular film and everybody's agenda today, I kind of felt like my agenda was not to have an agenda. It was just stay out of the conversation and let people watch these two people that disagree so much on something, still do that respectfully and maybe glean something from one another and come out of it at the end, where I feel like at the end of the film, they don't even want to leave each other, even though they still don't agree, not giving anything away. You know, but it's tricky to keep it totally balanced, in that you have one character who's, you know, Freud is really a couple days away from dying and he's really coming at Lewis, and at times, you know, he can be a bit overbearing, there's no question about it. But what Matthew and I talked about a lot in preparation for the film was kind of finding a zen place to be and just being balanced and being filled with kindness and respect. And I thought he really took that to heart, because one of the things that I hoped came out of this film would be, for anyone who sees it, is this idea of how important listening is. And it's like it's gone out of society today. It's just the loudest voice in the room wins immediately. And listening is what it's all about. It's one of the hardest things to do as an actor. And Matthew exemplified how amazing it can be when somebody really is listening, because you can read this whole dialogue on his face that's going on opposite Hopkins. And it's very, very powerful. And if he had been screaming and yelling back, it would have been disrespectful. Matthew was like, I would have never done that. I don't think Lewis would do that to somebody that he knows is dying and is sort of off the rocker a little bit at this point. And he wouldn't do it. So, I mean, at times he gets upset, as anybody would, but I think that's what makes it interesting. So I hope it's balanced. It was the intention of the director, whether or not I succeeded in that, but it was to be balanced.
Well, that's how it came across to me. Certainly in the version that I watched. But loss was sadly a feature for both Freud and for Lewis in their life. They both lost parents. You know, Freud tragically lost a daughter and then a grandson. How did both of them cope with suffering? Because they sort of coped with it in different ways, didn't they? And obviously you go into that a little bit in the film.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do find it in different ways. I mean, it really, it's funny because it's a therapy session for both men, in a sense, like each other's psychiatrists in a weird way. You know, I don't pretend to know how they both coped with loss in their lives, truly. I mean, it's a very personal thing, dealing with loss. I know that for Freud, it ate him up. I mean, his daughter that died was really the apple of his eye. She was always the bright, shining thing in his life. And when she died, I think it was really, really hard for Anna. And then she chose his profession as well, as a woman at that time. Very, very difficult to follow in these, you know, incredible shoes, and actually made her own way in the world, which is incredible. But I guess they did find different ways to go about it. I mean, Lewis found God, I mean, and a comfort in that. And Freud, I think, just forged ahead as a scientist and somebody that's never stopped, never stopped, like a force of nature. And I did love that about Hopkins in the film. Like every time he sort of sits down and starts to keel over, he bounces back up. He's not giving up.
It is interesting though, isn't it, that for Freud actually the problem of suffering was one of his biggest fuels for disbelieving in God. And you see that, and again it was portrayed really well, I thought, by Matthew Goode, where C.S. Lewis says, "I buried religion with my mother," that sense that actually suffering does often lead us away from God. But for C.S. Lewis, he then found his way back, obviously. And there seems to be, I don't know whether this is your experience as well, Matthew, but certainly in the UK, there does seem to be a sort of growing awareness of our own mortality. I don't know whether it's because of the global pandemic or because, as you mentioned, the wars and things like that. I mean, why is it important to be talking about these pertinent issues? Perhaps that, as you say, is one of the reasons why the film has been received so well by these for the reasons that these actors wanted to do it, because you are discussing really important things, aren't you?
I mean, why think about mortality? It's about life and embracing life. I mean, I guess because it's the Buddhists. I mean, you think about it every day. You think about your death and you think about life because you want to live your life. And I think that's something that Western society has had a pretty big way of just sort of shoving it into the corner. And we're just going to all buy into the idea that we just gloss over it in Western society, you know? And I think there's something about thinking about it that allows you the opportunity to consider your life and the decisions you're making and live a fuller life through understanding that it's not going to last forever. And a religion is something that can help with that at times because you do contemplate it more through religions, but people have really gone away from religion a lot as well these days. Spirituality, I think, is important. For me, it is anyway, but it's, I don't know, if you don't consider death and you just want to pretend everything, I think it brings kindness. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I think you think if you consider death, you're considering your life and you're considering, how do I want to behave with other people? And what do I want to do? Am I just going to be all right all the time? Or can I perhaps consider a different point of view? Or can I be kinder to people and embrace life in a different way? So I encourage it. I think it's a good thing.
There was a really pertinent moment in the film, certainly for me, I was quite moved by it, where when the bomb sirens go off, it's a church where Lewis and Freud go for protection. Was that a conscious decision for it to be a church?
Well, I think that was in the play and the original script when it came to me. So I can't really speak to what Mark did. I thought it was brilliant. I mean, I love the idea. I don't know. There was something great about seeing Freud knowing all the stuff and, you know, in the churches and yet he's not a believer, but he's just so interested and curious about other cultures. So, but it's beautiful the way that, that unfolds in Mark's portrayal of it. I don't know whether or not that would have happened. I suppose that was where the shelter was in the neighborhood.
One of the things that Mark set out from the play was these incredible flashback scenes where you go into Lewis's childhood, Freud's childhood, some of the things, the key moments in their lives. How did you go about doing that? Where did the idea come from for that?
Well, Mark had a bunch of them in the beginning when he first sent me the script. And then I thought, well, I'm not a big fan of flashbacks in general myself. But with this, I thought better just to go bigger. You know, not at all. So I decided to embrace it for better or worse. I think what it does is it requires the audience to be a little bit more patient. And I'm not sure in today's world that all audiences are built the same. So certainly an American audience might be slightly different than a UK one. I don't know. But it does require you to be a little bit more patient. But I think what it does is it allows you the opportunity to experience some of the things that make these people who they are. Otherwise, you're just being told it. Like, for instance, the PTSD that C.S. Lewis has experienced, I think to not show the war or to not show how he actually manifests that is a disservice to understanding who he actually is at this time when these two men meet. So it was important to me to have these flashbacks and to show them. Mm. Also, it's two men in a room. And as much as, you know, some people would like to just see two men in a room the whole time, it doesn't really work. You have to go somewhere.
It definitely moves things along a little bit and sort of fills in some of the blanks for sure.
I hope so. And I hope that it's sort of like what it was supposed to do was sort of tap into the unconscious a little bit in some places too, and just let some feelings and emotions pass through and let that, one of my favorite moments in the film is when Lewis is all of a sudden walking through the forest after the biscuit tin. And then we see Lewis just walking through the forest and sort of, it's a bit imaginative. And I think it says more by showing that than you could ever tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you definitely do justice to his huge imagination. Now, we know that obviously in the film, you don't portray this, but a few weeks after this imagined conceit, this imagined conversation, Freud goes on to take his own life. That obviously did happen historically. They touch on it in the film that he's planning on doing that. How would C.S. Lewis have perceived that, Freud taking his own life?
I don't think he would have approved of it at all. So I do not get that impression. And we tried to really be true to Lewis. It was interesting. There was a moment at the end of the film where Lewis is seen looking back at Anna and Dorothy. You know, there's the temptation just to have him smile and be like, ah, ha, ha, they're together. And I approve of this and everybody be happy-go-lucky and about it. And I just was like, that's not right. That's not how he would have felt. And we got to honor the man that he was and his beliefs at this point. So we don't do that, you know? And I think it doesn't mean he doesn't have love in his heart for her or anything else, because he does, but it's just not in his belief set. So that was the thing I really wanted to get across, is by being authentic to these two people for who they really are, we can still be authentic and respectful and do that right. And it doesn't mean that they don't have love at the same time, if that makes sense.
I think what's interesting, there's quite a few letters that he wrote to Arthur Greaves, his best friend growing up, where he talks about suicidal thoughts. I'm not sure whether that's pre or post conversion, but I do imagine, and again, I think Matthew Goode portrays this, there would certainly have been an amount of sympathy, even if he didn't necessarily agree with the act.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he was a very empathetic person, at least from what I gleaned from him and this limited experience, was that he had a lot of empathy.
Yeah. And you definitely touched on this in terms of wanting to portray the humanity of these two sort of giant academic giants. And I think, you know, both Freud and Lewis seem simultaneously confident in their beliefs, but also vulnerable. And even Freud, who's this kind of big, larger than life character, there are definitely moments where he comes across very vulnerable. Was that intentional, to draw out their vulnerability, particularly in light of the looming World War II?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, not only because of the war, but just they're human and they're flawed and they're not perfect people that have not even, they haven't even lived up to their own best versions of themselves yet. And I think that they were people that really tried to, but also failed at times. So, and I think they were struggling. It was interesting. My wife's brother's a pastor, and he said, what I loved most about your portrayal of Lewis is that, like, we're supposed to constantly challenge ourselves as Christians. And that's something that I think Lewis was struggling. I mean, he had found Christianity, but I think he also really struggled over his relationship with Janie Moore. And I think he struggled over the PTSD, which was pretty profound.
Matthew, this is a massive question, but who do you think has impacted culture more, Lewis or Freud?
I mean, it is called Freud's Last Sessions. I mean, it'd be hard to argue that anybody has had as much influence on Western society as Freud in some ways. I mean, he really was just a gigantic giant of thought change in the 20th century. So that's not to say that Lewis didn't have a profound importance, and certainly within Christianity as well. But I think I'd probably lean towards Freud on that one. But I don't think that they need to necessarily be compared. It's not that. They're both really amazing, great intellectuals and did great things with their lives.
As you've mentioned at various points, the play and the film are based on a book by Armand Nicolli called The Question of God. Do you think viewers will be any closer to an answer about that, about the question of God, about the existence of God, by the end of the film? And if it's not too pertinent a question, were you any closer to I guess, a decision around that yourself?
Yeah, I'm sorry to report, but no and no. It's not a, you know, listen, you don't come to see Freud's Last Session because you're going to go and have an answer to this question. We don't have an answer, unless Lazarus might have an answer if he actually is and can come back and prove that. And we all sure of that. But I mean, other than that, like, we don't know. Nobody knows. I mean, Hopkins talked about it all the time. I love it. He's like, we don't know. Nobody knows. And we'll find out, you know. That wasn't the point of it. I think the point of it was really to just, for me at least, it was to look at these men's lives and how they came to these places, and the fact that they would be intellectually curious enough to talk about the different points of view and to consider the different points of view and to maybe glean something from one another and or from it overall. But if you think that any of us have the answer, well, it's a bit, I don't know.
Presumptuous.
Yeah.
Matthew, just as we finish, is there anything you would want to ask either Lewis or Freud in light of everything that you've learned about them while making this film?
No, if I could do anything, I would love to have just heard them sit down together for an hour and rewrite this whole thing and just write with them. just to hear what they really would have said. Do you know what I mean? I think that would be just a joy. But you know, Mark, this is really Mark's screenplay. I mean, I helped a little bit to get it into screenplay form, but it's his play from this book. It's basically, to be really honest with you, it's taking a lot of the words and ideas of Lewis and Freud that Nikolai collected. And that's what we're hearing here. And that's one of the joys of it, is that they've been really true to both characters. So you're hearing basically, and I think in some ways that, like, that's why I would love to hear the two of them speak, is I think it wouldn't have been too far off if they were really talking about it. You know, I think that Mark did a really good job of disseminating all the information and using as much of the real words as he could in places. And I think that's really interesting.
If people want to watch the film, what's the best way to do? Just head to the cinema?
Well, if you're in the UK right now, it would be wonderful if you'd head to the cinema. Absolutely. And it really is a film that plays best on the big screen. I mean, to see these guys' performances, they're just so wonderful in it. And Ben Smithard's cinematography is amazing. And Luciana Righi, the production designer, this would be one of her last films. And she worked with Hopkins on Howard's End 50 years earlier or something as well. So not 50, like 30 or 40, but
a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. But it just looks beautiful, I think, on the big screen. So that would be the way that I would suggest to see it. But otherwise, I'm sure it'll be on Netflix or wherever else streaming soon as well. But I hope people enjoy it and take from the conversation and start their own conversations. And that was always what I hoped for, was that maybe at the end of this, people could talk about it and talk about some things that maybe they're a little uncomfortable talking about, that in today's world, people are afraid to talk a little bit. And that's sad. And I think we all need to be able to listen and talk more.
Yeah. So. And have those civilized conversations with people that you vehemently disagree with.
Yeah. I think it's important. Yeah. It's about living. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Matthew. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.